You are listening to Beyond the Jargon, a jargon-free look at graduate students and their research journeys here at UVic.
Welcome to Beyond the Jargon. I'm your host today, Liz MacArthur. Joining me in the studio is Leah Callan. Thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you.
You're doing your master's in fine arts here at the university in writing, specifically playwriting. What sort of led you to UVic? How did you wind up doing doing this degree here at the university?
Well, I did my undergrad, and I only just finished it last year. So I actually came to UVic to honestly study poetry. That was my first love, and really impractical, I suppose, on many levels, but that's what drew me here. And then I started to take writing workshops and got involved with the playwriting and the screenwriting. And although when I first started them, it was like kind of sheer terror because it was just very new to me from a writing point of view. But I fell in love with them and just wanted to continue, so I kept taking those workshops as well as the poetry. And then by the time I graduated, I kind of got a surprise offer to do my master's in the playwriting. And it was a bit of deus ex machina because I wasn't expecting this to drop out of the sky, but it was just a great opportunity, so I'm going with it. That's pretty much it.
You talk about how it's sort of scary to do those workshops. Are you talking about like critiques and putting your work on display like that and having people sort of go through it?
It is, but for me, it was just playwriting, theater of any kind, just the format themselves. Screenwriting and playwriting were new to me. I had never really tried them before till I came to UVic. I sort of am like an armchair actor in my life. I mean, I've sung in the past and I've danced. I studied ballet for like 9 years and I studied singing for a long time. But there was some sort of freakishly shy part of me that is always been this teenage girl who tried to go audition for Cats in high school. Because I was like, I found all the spandex and fur just super alluring. And I tried to go to this audition. It all comes down to this moment, I've decided. I tried to go to this audition, and when I walked through those doors into the auditorium, I just like panicked, bolted, ran home. And I think ever since then, some part of me has regretted that I didn't just try.
Right.
But I'm this shy, introverted person. So instead of acting, I find that playwriting is just giving me an opportunity to create the characters and voices for the people who aren't shy and just can, you know, hopefully run with it and enjoy it. So That's where, I don't know, I got into that through just trying it new. I guess if anyone's trying a new genre of writing and they're a bit terrified of it at the beginning or don't know what they're, or feel like they don't know what they're doing, They should just, if it calls to them, they should just try it and go with it because it may be for you. I don't know. But
it's funny that, two things out of that. One, it's those childhood experiences that sort of shape us later in life. I don't know. They're, it's interesting how that can lead to different chapters of our life. Do you think that you would ever, are you content to be like a playwright or now, or would you ever try and go back and do the auditioning again, do you think?
Okay, I think I'm like really good at Ophelia, but like in my bathtub, like I don't think I'd be good at that on the stage just because of the terror, the stage fright and terror, and because I'm super soft-spoken and everything. But I did take just some intro acting courses through the theater department in my undergrad, just as electives and for fun. And that kind of helped loosen me up too. I mean, they got us doing improv and trying to act out little plays, and I really enjoyed it. But I think more than anything, I think more than anything, it feeds the writing and just having that experience. Although some people have suggested or asked if I'd like to do like a one-woman show and take that leap and be that brave, but I don't know. Because I'm just not really the, I don't know, like it appeals to me in my head, but I'm not classically the super extroverted, jump up and down stage person.
Right.
I don't know. All the actors are going to be offended by my, like, you know,
yeah.
I'm a quiet person. So.
Yeah. I think that's fair. I think, yeah, it definitely takes a certain type of personality to do those things. What does your master's project look like? Are you writing one play? Are you dissecting an already written play? What are you doing?
I'm writing a two-act play in theory, although it's really, really early stages. I did a one-act play last, I'm already losing track of time. Well, it was early in the year anyway, which was originally going to be my thesis, but it kind of called The Daughter of Turpentine, and it ended up being put on by Satco at the Phoenix. But it kind of feels like it's just a one-act play. Like, I don't really feel it can go further than that. So that was an amazing experience, but I'm going to try to do a two-act play. And it's all about Russia because... Because I just honestly have always been drawn to Russia for some weird reason. I don't really know why, because I'm not Russian or anything. Mm-hmm. And I was just writing about sort of past historical figures. Sort of a surreal, I always do kind of surreal or magically realistic kind of plots. But I do them so that they're really about human beings. And the magical realism part or the weird part, well, it's partly for entertainment, hopefully, but it's also just a way of, like, communicating like, a human aspect. I'm not trying to go wildly into fantasy and craziness, but so much as it's just my way of navigating an idea. Anyways, I'm getting off the topic. since... Everything kind of went to hell in Russia recently with the Ukraine. My focus has changed a bit, and I started off with two characters from the past, Anastasia Romanov and Stalin's daughter, actually. And they meet each other on the other side after Stalin's daughter, Lana Peters, dies. And Anastasia Romanov is sort of her guardian angel. But they don't like each other. But it's like a starting point for addressing where, I hope, where Russia is now. And particularly I'm aiming for talking about gay rights. So I feel the story kind of is taking on its own direction. And right now I'm not totally firm on where that's going. But it sort of deals with freedom to express yourself spiritually, sexually, physically, artistically, just individually as a human being, kind of wrapped up in this strange metaphor of the afterlife, the Russian afterlife. I don't know how else to say it. It's like I'm using historical, ideally I'm using historical figures, but they're not really about the history so much as I hope they'll be more universal, that they're just people. So they're a starting point for that.
I mean, if those are your topics, the freedom of expression and gay rights and things like that, I mean, being drawn to Russia will make this probably easy to build that kind of material.
Yes, I'm hoping so. Well, I find it fascinating, and it's going to be very challenging, and I'm going to have to do tons of research. But also the characters just, like, I find my best writing happens when the characters just start speaking to me on their own as well, creatively. If I get really stuck in, wrapped up in history or what I think sounds good in a concept or a moral or something like that, it gets really stiff and starchy and isn't such a good, it isn't always good. It doesn't flow well. But if you let the characters kind of guide you as to what they want, I mean, I even had this summer I had a sort of a dream where the two main characters were fighting with each other, mm-hmm. and I was actually one of the characters, and they had a fight. And so then when I woke up, I'm like, okay, I think I need to take this in this direction. So although it's nice to have a vision, mm-hmm. I kind of have to let the play take over a bit too. I don't know, and see where it goes, where it wants to go.
Mm-hmm.
So
the creative process is very sort of mysterious and interesting. The idea that you can talk about your own characters that you have created as speaking to you and directing you almost when they are sort of extensions of yourself. How does that work, and how do you, I guess, interact with those parts of yourself that those characters are coming out of?
Well, that's kind of the fun part, because although they can be inspired by real people who lived, and that's kind of a terror too, because I worry about if that ever actually got on the stage, if people would judge that. Oh, it's not historically accurate. What are you doing? but really they are pieces of you as well, and they give you that sort of... Well, a lot of writers hate it when you talk about catharsis in your writing. They really do. I don't know why, but I actually do find it cathartic that I get to process... I get to move through things in my own life that are appropriate to the story. I mean, through these characters. And it's, for me, when I write a play, it's like putting on the costumes and it's like role-playing. I really am becoming that character, but... It gives you freedom at the same time to express things in yourself that maybe you don't feel free to express in your own life. So like my one character is very sort of uptight and a little self-righteous and a little full of herself, I guess. And I don't know. So I get to sort of have fun with this sort of superiority complex, but at the same time, she's secretly helping this girl. She just does it in a very blunt kind of way. she's kind of lived her life all being protected from the rest of the world, and so she lacks some sense of social grace, I guess. although she's a princess. And then the other character is, well, I've been told by one of my profs she sounds like Betty Davis, so I don't know. She's pretty cranky and down to earth and sort of making fun of the other one because she's a virgin and just going for all the sore points about, because she's had many men and arguing about religion and all kinds of things, getting in arguments. Mm-hmm. Anyways, these are all kinds of strange, they're not me, and yet they're all little bits of me that I can play with and just go to town with, that in real life I would never, like, behave like that. I would just, you know, not. But
so then you take this, these aspects, little bits of yourself that you get to play with and explore, and you said that the Phoenix Theater put on one of your earlier play, obviously different subject matter, but I'm guessing that sort of similar parts of you are embedded in the play. Is it then difficult to see actors take that and then go wild with it? Or, like, how involved are you? Are you, like, right in there saying, like, no, that's not the way it is? Or
actually, no, surprisingly, I loved it, and I enjoyed it so much. It is really nerve-wracking, but it was mostly, like, they allowed me to sit in on a lot of the process, and we actually did rewrites together. And I did rewrites almost up to the last minute with them, but it wasn't because, it's because I wanted to make it the best that it could be for them. And I might have driven them crazy a bit with that. It's kind of like, it was a surreal experience. It was like watching, kind of like watching Dr. Frankenstein bring, like, the dead to life kind of thing. Because it was just this flat, one-dimensional fantasy in my head, I guess, or story. And then suddenly people are larger than life acting it out. It actually kind of, well, in this experience, it kind of became... the characters became more precious to me because these people were taking them so seriously and to heart and mm-hmm. trying to breathe life into them. I think it's a great experience because I saw how some of them didn't translate as well off the page. And so I had to rewrite one of the main characters, Jake. I totally rewrote in many ways because he just was not right. But through hearing the actor struggle with lines and things, I feel like I finally got his voice, how I wanted it. But it's nerve-wracking, but it's nerve-wracking more on a... I worry that people will not enjoy my work, but I didn't worry about the actors at all. I thought that they, if anything, made it 100% better. So.
Yeah. Did you get feedback from people who saw the play and hear what they thought about it?
Some feedback. It seemed to be very positive overall. If there was negative feedback, I did not get to hear it, mm-hmm. which maybe is good or bad. I don't know. I got a sense of what worked in it myself and what didn't, what were the better parts and what weren't. But overall, the studio was full and people seemed to enjoy it. Actually, I was sitting next to... The one time I did worry was I was sitting next to this young woman and she started crying during it. It's like a pretty intense play because it is about a girl who is brought up to believe that she is a fairy tale princess in the woods, and she's like, God, I can't believe I'm using the word like. That is so so bad. Anyways. Sorry, Yvick. Okay. She is, she's basically being held hostage by this man. Mm-hmm. And who ends up being her father, but she doesn't know that. And in reality, she's not a princess at all. This is just all a lie that he made up to keep her under control, and there's incest in it. So at the end of the play, this young woman beside me was crying, and I really felt bad. I was like, I really hope that this is like a good thing for you and not that I've just shredded your soul because that would not be good. Mm. So I don't know. Like, I'll probably always remember that person and wonder, you know, if that was a good experience for her to get out of her system or whether I traumatized her. I don't know, honestly. Mm. I hope not. But,
How does an experience like that influence you, perhaps, like, in future work? Are you keeping that in mind? Like, is there a line that you think, I don't want to traumatize my audience?
Yes, there definitely is. I mean, I think one of the challenges with drama that I'm learning is that you're always being encouraged to take risks and to push the envelope. If you don't, you're cliched and you're boring, and it's like being boring in theater is the worst thing you probably can be. Mm-hmm. So you try really hard to constantly push the edges and experiment, and of course drama is all about conflict, so you're always throwing stuff in there. How can I heighten this and make people uncomfortable to some degree? Because if you don't, I mean, what the hell's going on? Why are we watching this? But at the same time, yeah, sometimes how far is too far? And that's definitely with that play for sure. And it will be with this one in Russia too, because, I think honestly, when I start writing, I just have to not think about too much limitations or how people might judge it, because if you start censoring yourself, you can't be creative. So you just have to let it go, throw it, whatever you want on the page. And then as you're editing it, decide, you know, yeah, just decide when is the fine point of, okay, that tension is really great, now it's time to pull back, versus, okay, you've gone way too far, it's melodrama, now we're into The Young and the Restless. This is just not good, you know, mm-hmm. So... No offense to The Young and the Restless, but it's that balance, and I'm still, you know, learning with that and struggling with that. So,
As far as your writing process for your two-act play, how far along are you right now?
I've finished a rough draft of the first act, and I'm actually trying to rewrite that at the moment. And that usually, for me, involves a lot of weird reimagining of things, like with the set, and I'm like, okay, what if they were inside a Fabergé egg? So, you know, like I just try the weirdest reimagining of things just to see what I can come up with. But I have like, usually I have an arc to the end that I have in mind. So I don't know how the whole thing is going to play out bit by bit, but I have a finishing closing image and an idea of how I want it to resolve and just the general tone. I usually write pretty dark stuff, but there is a lot of dark humor in it, so... And I also struggle between... I struggle between going really dark and just being... I could almost go so, like, light that it's farce sometimes, like, over-the-top farce. So I'm still struggling with, in this draft, what the tone is overall, I guess. How dark am I going to go? Or where are the light parts going to be? So, you know. But by the end of the summer, I hope to have a full first draft, both acts. And then next year, I'll be working on it all year with my supervisor. So,
Where does all the dark material come from? Why do you write such dark stuff?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know. I think it's kind of that still waters run deep thing, maybe. Like, I'm a pretty quiet, reserved person. But I have a lot of stuff going on in my head, and, I don't know. I find myself most at home with, dark stories. I can't really say why. I think, well, I've had, without getting too melodramatic, I've had a lot of sort of painful things happen in my life, and mostly around health issues and things. I had cancer a couple years ago, and I don't know, just a lot of things have happened, and I suppose they happen to everybody, but it, for me, I get a lot of it out through the drama and through my writing on the page. And I also just enjoy reading dark things, too. Like, that's what I gravitate towards. So one of the books that I was reading a lot, or that kind of inspired when I was writing Daughter of Turpentine, was Lolita. So... you know, I like sort of weird, warped, but poetic things like that. And that's just who I am, I guess. I don't, now I'm going to be going home and thinking about this like for days. I don't know.
Were you attracted to dark stuff as a kid? I've met people who've had trauma in their lives, and sometimes that does change your person, or not your personality, but your like your sense of humor, or being able to appreciate maybe material that might be more challenging to someone who doesn't necessarily or hasn't necessarily had to deal with hardship.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I'm answering your question, but in a way, dark humor has helped me survive through things. Sometimes I actually say jokes. I think I say things or write things on the page or even tweet things, and I think people think I'm serious, but I'm actually just doing dark humor. Like, I'm actually almost kind of making fun of myself or life or whatever. But it's almost like a survival tactic. I don't know. I just... like, I'm drawn to fairy tales, and I've always been drawn to stuff like that, but not in a, like, lightweight Disney kind of way, although I loved Disney growing up, but more of a, This is dark. This is gonna be good. I don't know. This is not coming through right.
Maybe I'm sort not of sure more like explain. The Maleficent side of the story.
Yeah. Like I did write a little screenplay, in screenwriting fourth year, where it was actually Sleeping Beauty, but she had come out of her. I treated it as that she'd been in a 100-year coma, and. This was after the happily ever after, so now she's actually fed up with her life with the prince and is depressed and making his life a living hell, and they have to go back and sort out that she's traumatized from the initial attack with the thorn, and she has to work through that before she can be happy again, so... Mm-hmm. I think just thinking about that, the reason why I like to write that is I just like to give people room to be human, that they don't have to be perfect and they don't have to be Miss Mary Sunshine all the time, that it's great to be positive and fun and have the humor, but there's shadows to us and that's okay. I mean, it's within reason. Mm-hmm. That's okay to express that. And so I think my characters are always... my female characters are always struggling with feeling like they're allowed to express that shadow side and not have to apologize for it or kill it, that they can, you know, have the darkness as well as the sugary light. So that's like being human is that balance, and that's okay. Anyways.
I think there's an appetite for that, though. I think there's a real appetite. Like, if you read in the media blogs that call out magazines that airbrush models, for instance, like, make people look perfect. And the idea that a lot of us grew up with Disney princesses, and I've seen articles now, like, Disney lied to me and I have these weird expectations of what my life should be, that kind of thing.
Well, I think it's taken me a while, and it sounds really cliched, but I think that I'm just coming to grips with that now. Like, as far as even romance, I really grew up, you know, buying into that, loving the romantic hero figure, just the Prince Charming, I loved musicals growing up, and I loved Phantom of the Opera, and, you know, just all these kinds of romantic heroes who are going to come in and save the day and be super romantic, and it's really nice, but it's also just... not reality. I actually just watched Frozen, which I know is like all the rage right now.
I haven't actually seen it, so, and I don't even know what it's about. So.
Okay. Well, I don't watch a lot of cartoons anymore, but but I did watch that because one of my profs actually said, "Have you watched that?" And I'm like, "No, okay, I'll watch it." But at the end, it's actually the women who save each other instead of the man saving them for a change. And that was just really, I'm embarrassed to admit it, but that was really moving watching that. I was like, wow, that's really, really nice.
You had a little feminist moment.
Yeah, I was like, I mean, I consider myself a feminist, but I also admit that I have this serious romantic streak and that is constantly at odds with that, maybe. I don't know. So, yeah, I'm wrestling with that all the time in my writing. So I'm not against romance. I love romance, but not if it's paralyzing you as a woman and you can't, you know, find your own freedom and power and voice. So, you know. I guess is the thing.
Yeah. Holy cow. We're pretty much out of time here.
Okay.
I just want to ask you, so when do you expect to be totally done your master's?
I hope a year from now. So that's what I'm planning. I mean, it depends how the writing process goes and how rocky it is. And of course, I've got to get feedback on drafts. I'll go through many, many drafts, and I've got to feel good about it myself before I defend my thesis, so put on, like, armor and go defend it. But hopefully in a year, so it'll be, and then who knows what after that, so.
But. All right. Well, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Oh, thank you.
And I'd like to talk to you again about it once you're done.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Beyond the Jargon. If you want to listen again, go to our website, cfuv.uvic.ca, and click on the Listen tab.